Hashtag psychotherapy unfucked with Mark Fielding.
Hello, welcome to the first episode of season 5 of Hashtag psychotherapy unfucked. As you know, I'm Mark Fielding, psychotherapist and relationship counsellor and your host. I'm delighted to be back for season 5, and Joe and I are absolutely knocked out by the fact we've come this far. Season 5 will be themed around relationships. More on this later. Today, I have the absolute pleasure to interview Maddie Tyers, actor, author and presenter, and Jimmy Eden, actor, comedian and director. Some of you may recognise them from Lego Masters Australia and from their popular YouTube channel. So thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mark.
Nice to meet
you.
Great to
be here. Can I just jump in and say, usually in Australia for marriage counselling, it's like quite expensive. So to get a free session,
we're lucking into that. We don't have
to pay anything for this, do we?
No, I mean, I might ask for a small check at the end of the podcast. We'll see how it goes. You know, but maybe it'll be a freebie. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about your careers to start off with, really, and just how you both got into the entertainment industry. I mean, they're probably big stories, but I mean, how did you both get here?
Yeah, you go first, Jimmy.
Oh,
you've got more of a career than me.
I guess, how did I, like, just so I don't spend a million years talking about it, what really got me into it, I think, was just discovering, you know, in life as you're a kid, what you're terrible at, and then finally you discover something that you're good at. And I was always making silly voices and doing silly things, and when I realized I could get laughter, that was a really good way for to have a bit of clout, but also I think a really good survival mechanism. And that got me into entertaining. And then, you know, fast forward, I've done 20 years in comedy and all sorts of entertainment, directing, building Lego with my wife. Yeah. But I think it was that urge to just go, oh, I'm good at acting. I'm good at being silly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, look, my story's a little bit similar, Mark. I as a kid, absolutely loved being center of attention.
Still does.
Jimmy was, yeah, I'd probably say nothing's changed. From a really little kid, I was always like putting on sketch shows and concerts and dance performances for families and friends. And, you know, the second I was old enough to join like a dance group or a theatre group, I did. And so really got sort of stuck into the industry quite early. But my parents both being not so much from the entertainment industry. My mum's a musician, but from the acting side, they both didn't know much about that world. And so they kind of were like, well, if you want to do it, go for it. But, you know, it's up to you to kind of get the ball rolling. So, I'm a bit of a, you know, when I've got an idea in my head, I like to roll with it. And yeah, sort of got myself an agent really early. I think I was like 13 or 14 and started auditioning for things really early. So, you know, my career is predominantly based in film and TV. Like Jimmy said, we've done some stuff together on television involving Lego. But I also, do a lot of presenting, and I've also written a kid's book, which interestingly, dabbles with mental health as a theme as well. So I'm excited to talk a little bit about that today.
I think a cool thing is we're both like playful. We love to play and that comes through in, you know, Lego and especially in performing, because in many ways that's just like playing, you know, it's what little kids do. But with grown-ups we both love to play, I think.
Exactly. Keeps you young, Mark.
Keeps you young.
And I'm kind of filtering what you're both saying really through, you know, through your personal happiness. And I guess you're both doing, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, vocation is probably the wrong word, but I mean, you're both doing what you love, aren't you? You know, and, you know, a lot of people can't say that. And I guess I'm sure all of the entertainment industry isn't wonderful and, you know, and kind of happiness promoting, but doing what you love, I mean, must be great for your mental health and levels of happiness. And doing it together also probably is great.
Absolutely. I think it's a double-edged sword, though, because it absolutely is in all of those instances. Mm. But for every time you're doing what you love, at least 50 other times someone's going, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. We're not going to tell you why. And you didn't get it. and we'll leave you to just think, make up to your own devices what you did wrong.
Yeah.
So, and also we look after it. Like, it's so good to be working together, but then also when one of us is rejected, which is a lot of the time,
yeah,
you feel bad for each other, right? Mm-hmm.
But I also think that works in, like, that's a positive thing in that we have each other. Oh, so, you know, definitely. I know a lot of performers and artists that have partners that are, say, outside the industry and don't necessarily understand the ups and downs of the entertainment world. So the fact that we both really understand that rejection really does help.
It does. But it's also awful to see each other go through it again and again and go, we've chosen this weird job where you just face so much rejection and it's nothing to do with you, but it's so hard not to think it has something to do with you. Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And look, and that's something that I think, you know, and we can kind of delve into it a little bit more later, but, you know, what we've both had to do to preserve our mental health and financial health over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years is both seek sort of other work. And so we've both got sort of other careers that we're sort of doing in conjunction with performing. So, you know, Jimmy's a producer and a director for a charity, a children's charity here in Australia that actually has a branch in the UK, the Starlight Children's Foundation. And I work for a university, RMIT, here as well. So we both kind of have quote unquote adult jobs that keep us afloat, which makes the blows, I suppose, I don't know, Jimmy, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but maybe less severe because we're not solely relying on performance for our sort of, I suppose, income. I think it's really healthy and important to have that balance. Not only financially, but for our, you know, sanity in a way.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely, yeah, and I guess I've, you know, not being in the entertainment industry particularly myself, really, I never really think about the rejections. I guess when we're kind of, you know, outside looking in, you know, well, I mean, we see kind of actors and performers working, but I guess what we don't see as members of the public is, you know, actors not working and the rejections. I mean, how do you both cope with the rejections? Because, I mean, loads of rejections coming in. I mean, that must be very difficult for you both, for anyone, actually.
Go for it, Jim.
It's interesting. I think a friend of mine gave me some really good advice, and it seems really brutal, but yeah, it is kind of harsh in a way. But it's like trying to live in a way that you're not owed anything, and not in a negative way, just in a oh, okay, like none of these jobs were ever mine to begin with, so I haven't lost them. But there's so many times where we're going for something or an opportunity and we already kind of claim it and hold on to it, so that when we don't get it, we feel so burned and we feel like something's been taken away from us. So I try, in theory, to go that way. Do I do it in practice?
No, but I think we both allow ourselves, and particularly over the last couple of years where we've, you know, maybe come close to certain big jobs or whatever it might be. And that almost like the closer you get to a job, the harder the fall is as well.
Yeah,
like,
I can see that.
Exactly. And so, you know, we also just allow each other to sort of, it sounds so lame, but to almost grieve the opportunity as well. And so you might have a day where you're just really down and feel really crap about it. And we both just go, it's okay to feel shit. Like, just feel it, and, you know, it will kind of eventually wash over you. But it's this weird like career where you, like Jimmy said, you become almost obsessed or like you know, really invested in a particular role or a gig or whatever it might be. So you put all your heart and energy into it, preparing for this audition or whatever it might be, and you know, when it doesn't sort of go your way, it feels like such a hard hit. And you do, it's hard not to take it personally when it's actually the furthest thing from personal. It's like half the time it's, you know, people have who they want in mind already, and you know, it's just the luck of the draw. But I think we've both really learned how each other responds as a couple, and I think that's been really helpful to kind of give each other the space we need, but also help pick the other person up when they need it. And
That was difficult for me, but it's been so great, is to learn that sometimes like talking to you about it doesn't help. Like, or like, I just have to be there for you, but not be there going, oh, how can we fix it? What's wrong? Here's this. Yeah. Maybe we could try this. Maybe we could do that. Maybe we could do like I. And it's so hard for me to just sit back and go, okay, I'm just going to be there and also not take that energy coming off you personally. Mm-hmm. Like think it's something I've done. It's,
no, of course.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, it's always so much better if I just give you space.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. And it's really interesting, you know, when working with couples, you know, the one partner moving in to try and find a solution, you know, for the other partner is so common, you know, and often the other partner just needs the space to, you know, to grieve or be sad. And, you know, it's not always gender specific, but I have to say it can be a little bit kind of male, that kind of response to move in and just try and, you know, problem solve. I mean, just to segue into, because when we were talking before the show, you both told me that you've both had therapy yourself. So I'm interested to ask you both a little bit, only as much as you're happy to share, just about your own kind of experiences of therapy and maybe a little bit about your own mental health journeys over the years. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
I love it. This is a topic we're both very, very easy for us to talk about, Mark. And, you know, something I think's really, been really great for Jimmy and my relationship is the fact that we are very open about our, you know, mental health struggles and issues. And we've sort of both supported each other over the last, you know, 10 years that we've been together. But yeah, quickly, a little bit of background on me. I have always been quite as I mentioned earlier, a outgoing kind of kid and quite perfectionistic in a way, but I developed an eating disorder at quite a young age, at sort of 9, 10, and that sort of progressed into quite a severe sort of condition in my sort of teens, where, you know, admitted into hospital and all that kind of stuff. So I've sort of battled with that for a lot of my, you know, younger years, but with the help of, you know, therapy, lots of psychologists, dietitians, my family and friends, I've sort of really been able to move through that. But it's definitely something that I still navigate on a daily basis, and I'm aware that it's something that I will kind of deal with ongoing into the future. I actually just listened to your most recent podcast about binge eating, which I found really fascinating because, a lot of the things you guys discussed, I could really relate to. Because it is like dealing with an addiction, you know, a lot of the time.
Absolutely.
And something I kind of need to constantly work on. So I see a therapist fortnightly, and I have for a very, very long time, and that's been amazing. And particularly over the last sort of 8-9 months, as we are actually due to have a baby next week, which is ridiculous. So we're so excited, but that's been a whole nother, you know, whirlwind of kind of mental kind of gymnastics to deal with for me, from a body perspective, from a like a changing of kind of identity perspective, but having my therapist alongside Jimmy and obviously being very open talking about my feelings, it's actually been a really positive experience. So I think for us being vocal about all this stuff's really helped us navigate that. But that's me anyway, but
I grew up as a little kid who had this incredible imagination and was like a big thinker, and then found that my brain wasn't very good at not thinking. So I, from a really early age, started self-medicating and experimenting with all sorts of fun drugs. That sort of continued through and has continued throughout a large amount of my time. I've been a comedian and an actor and a really successful filmmaker and producer, but also a really successful drug addict, I suppose. Really, really good at hiding it. Yeah. Really high functioning, still kicking goals, but definitely not kicking goals as much as I would have had I not been getting high quite a lot. I haven't spoken about this much, so it's I've just sort of used it to sort of survive and self-medicate. And I've been diagnosed with ADHD, and I think I just came from an era where education and how they found kids and with disorders and how they treated them back then has definitely changed a lot. And I'm sort of, back then you sort of had to work it out yourself a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And once I sort of hit puberty and started sort of, so I sort of started smoking weed around 13 years old. And I'm 42 now. And yeah, then got into all sorts of adventures on that. But I don't know. It's, I had a lot of things that I was dealing with, and I won't bore the episode with everything that was going on. It could feel like about five episodes, but I think at the start of 2022, COVID had just ended in Victoria. And of course, Victoria was one of the most locked down cities in the world. So it was 200 and something days.
Wow.
And so I was during that time, like, doing cocaine and weed and all sorts of fun things, and then got to the end of that and jumped on the scales and looked at my life and went, oh my gosh, like, what's going on here? So about 100 meters away from my house was a boxing gym, and I've never been a fighter or a kind of person that causes any trouble. I've always used humor to get out of conflict.
Yeah.
But I joined a boxing gym, got healthy, and started doing therapy as well. And I found that was just like having a shower for my mind, body, and soul.
Yeah.
Being able to go and exercise and talk to someone was so helpful, because obviously, like, my drug taking, that wasn't the issue. There was lots of other things going on underneath. But to be able to, like, use therapy and exercise has just been a game changer. And the type of therapy that I do is a really interesting type of therapy called parts therapy,
where you talk
to different parts of yourself. And then when you're in the situation, when the situation comes to a head where you're feeling stressed out, you can kind of have a bit of a chat to those parts and go, hey, what's going on here? Are you okay? And actually it's an incredible, therapy, and I found it so helpful. Like, it's been wonderful. So it's like fighting and this wonderful parts therapy has just, like, yeah, been incredible. Mm. Have you noticed a difference?
Yeah, it's been like huge game changer. Like, so much so, we've kind of gone from, you know, me being quite concerned about Jimmy's health and mental,
and likewise,
exactly, to going, oh, we're both in this really good place, and we're looking after ourselves, and we're feeling good, and we're sort of thriving, and, you know, we really want to start a family, and it's something we've kind of always wanted to do, but never felt, you know, I suppose, ready or in the right headspace for. So yeah, it's been a huge, almost like 180, I think.
Yeah,
which is fantastic, and it's definitely with you know, comes down to the help we've sought for ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to say, like, we're not just like, why doesn't everybody do this? I think we've also been so lucky to be in a privileged position to be able to, like,
go and get help. Exactly.
A bit to pay for it, really. Yeah.
In Australia, there's like still a pretty big gap. Well, there is definitely a big gap for people who are in need of therapy and being able to get it. Yeah. I'm not sure what the situation is like in the UK. I'm very ignorant.
There's huge
waiting lists and stuff. I mean, just in terms of, I mean, I'll just pull one example out. I mean, just in terms of people wanting, feeling they may have ADHD and looking, you know, for the NHS to diagnose. I mean, I've heard waiting lists of up to 5 years. I mean, that is, so it gives you an indication just where we are over here.
Totally. Yeah. And then on top of that, I'm guessing too, Mark, like it is here, it costs thousands upon thousands of dollars to actually even go and get the testing done as well, which is just not something everyone can afford. So, yeah, we're obviously very aware and grateful for the position we're in, that we can actually seek that treatment, because a lot of people can't.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, we've both had our trials and tribulations, but I suppose something we've both, and I certainly have sort of really kind of been able to reflect on over the last few years anyway, is that I suppose everyone has their coping mechanism. Everyone has their shit, you know? And for me, my coping mechanism was eating and restricting my food. And for Jimmy, it was, you know, drugs or alcohol or whatever it might be. Like, everyone has their thing. And it's just like, okay, well, how can we work with this to sort of knuckle down and work what, you know, work out what that core issue is, and the other thing sort of just falls away once you've sort of really started to address the underlying thing.
Yeah, that was the really interesting part about when it was stopping taking drugs. I was really worried that, oh God, I'd be really addicted to these things. Luckily, I wasn't doing anything very addictive other than kind of smoking marijuana fundamentally. And a bit of cocaine. Luckily, I didn't get addicted, and I was able to drop that once we started dealing with the issues.
Yeah,
I think like once we just started talking about what was actually upsetting me, which I won't go into, but in my therapy, it suddenly was about that, and I'm like, oh great, I can actually be myself, and I can actually be still, and I can and I can just be comfortable in my own skin, and I don't need to go and get high to escape.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. And the self-medication, I mean, it's really common with ADHD, you know. I mean, it is really, really common with ADHD. But can I just ask, we don't have to go into this in too much detail, Jimmy, but when did the diagnosis come? Was that early? Was that late?
It was in year 10, so I'd probably be about 16.
Okay.
So sort of just kind of mid puberty, really.
Yeah.
Or, you know, towards the, when's puberty?
Yeah.
Okay. And also just to pick up on what you were saying, Maddie, I mean, goodness me. I mean, bringing in what you both said, working through addiction, working through an eating disorder. I mean, these are, you know, they can be lifelong journeys, you know, and I think a lot of internal strength in you both in order to kind of push through, because these are very, very difficult things. Well, these are very, very difficult things for people to push through. And you know, particularly with eating disorders, you know, I always like having people that are in recovery from eating disorders on the show, because I think it shows people that listen to the show that it is possible, you know, because I think often people, when they're lost in the mire of the eating disorder, you know, that I think they lose hope that things can be any different. And I think it's also true with addiction as well. So it's great to hear kind of really, you know, moving forwards on their journey. I mean, I wanted to ask a little bit around a bit more about the pregnancy and mental health, and you touched on it a little bit, Maddie. I mean, what's it been like for you, you know, individually and as a couple?
Yeah. So crazy, Mark. Yeah, totally. And it's so interesting because, like, again, going back to what you were just saying then about, you know, being in the thick of an eating disorder and not kind of seeing light at the end of the tunnel. Like there was definitely points in my teenage years where I didn't even think I'd live past 20, let alone be married and have a baby at some point in my life. So to get to this point is just really so surreal and amazing. Yeah. And it does feel like such an achievement. And I think for a very long time, you know, the idea of getting pregnant terrified me because, you know, not only is it just this ridiculously huge responsibility, I just had this dread that I, you know, as a lot of people do, wouldn't be a good enough parent, or would perhaps pass on the issues that I have to my future daughter or son. And that really scared me. And I think, but like, you know, like we've been saying, going to sort of therapy and working through a lot of those fears really kind of helped me go, oh no, everyone has these fears. Like we're all, and most people going into, you know, starting a family freak out a little bit because it is such a big thing. But, you know, Jimmy and I are, you know, we have a really amazing relationship. And I think this future baby of ours, next week baby of ours, we're going to really, really work hard to allow her the space to sort of feel all the feelings that we may have had growing up and be honest and open with us and really kind of try and foster that sort of relationship that, you know, we have together. But But look, going back to the actual pregnancy itself, I'm really surprised myself. I think the biggest thing initially for me was the body changes and the, you know, obviously having a baby means you're going to, you know, have to change the way you eat and look after yourself, and you will absolutely put on weight because you're having a child, and like wrapping my head around a lot of the sort of the big fears that I've had around my body for a very, very long time was really confronting. However, I don't know whether it's been pregnancy hormones or what, but I've just loved the pregnancy journey. Like I've really, really enjoyed being pregnant, and I've been very lucky in that it's been a really positive experience. I haven't felt too sick. You know, I had a little bit of nausea at the start, but apart from that, like, I've felt really good. Like, my body has changed, but I've really kind of embraced and enjoyed the changes. Yeah. I say as our crazy dog barks downstairs. I'm so sorry, Chewy, crazy thing. But yeah, I'm really, really grateful that I've actually just found it to be a really lovely experience. And it's for the first time, like, I've eaten what I've needed and what my body's, I suppose, craved and sort of desired ever. Like, it's been the first time for as long as I can remember. And I think it's because the way I've framed it is it's actually just not about me anymore. It's it's about this baby, and it's not me that I'm worried about. It's it's keeping her healthy, and that's been such a drive. So yeah, I'm really excited for this next phase for us. And you know, I've just noticed a huge change in Jimmy in the sense of, you know, becoming a dad and stuff as well. So yeah, but you can talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, just before I kind of pick up with you, Jimmy. Yeah, I mean, there's something, you know, really, really kind of important around the framing. You know, often I think, you know, in therapy, you know, us as therapists, we talk about, you know, looking at different framings, and it all sounds a bit abstract, but I mean, it can be massive, can't it? You just frame something that's happening in your life in a different way, and your whole experience of it is different. So just to pick up on that, I mean, framing, I think, is so important. I mean, just to ask you, Jimmy, I mean, so you're going to be a dad in a week's time.
Yeah.
I mean, what's it been like? I mean, what's your kind of experience over the pregnancy been?
Yeah, similar to sort of what Maddie was saying to begin with, of you know those reservations to begin with. What's interesting is that, yeah, going back to sort of my history of dabbling with narcotics, I think that came from a very strange family life. A lot of it spiraled from that. And so there are also those pressures of, how's your family going to be? How are you going to be as a parent, as a family member? But I get on with kids. I work with kids. I am a giant child.
yeah, I can attest to
that. I have a very playful way. And so I've actually am so excited, and have always been so excited to be a dad. I was always really kind of, you know, when it came to us having a child, was always pro Maddie's decision, because, you know, I'm doing very little of the pushing and the work there. However, I've always really wanted to have children. However, what was really weird, and I think is like a great kind of, you know, signpost to dads, you know, who are maybe listening to this in the future. You just don't know how you're going to feel. Like, you just don't know how you're going to feel. And when it first happened and we realized we were having a baby, I was so excited for it to happen, but just sort of went numb to begin with, and found, and just went, why am I not feeling, why have I got this sort of emotional pause happening on me? And I think going through it, you're kind of protecting yourself at the start, because suddenly you might be bringing this human into the world, and there's so many kind of hurdles before it's declared a safe
liable
pregnancy. You have to really guard yourself, because I'm very passionate and very loving, and I think once I open the floodgates to going, oh my god, I have this child and I'm just gonna love it to bits, and it's so weird deciding when you make that decision to feel that, but at the start it was just, the door was stuck. And it was so weird. And I had that conversation with you in the car after we'd been to that dreadful ultrasound. Just, we had a very almost comically dreadful experience in an ultrasound. But I was in the car just telling you about it. And I think once we sort of checked in and went, well, it's okay not to know what the hell's going on. It's all right to be in the not knowing. We've just gotten pregnant. We've still got 9 months. Let's just go and find it out. Let's go and be these little pregnancy detectives and work out. I mean, don't get me, I know where babies come from, but just to go, you know, how do other dads feel? And so that I read some fantastic books. I mean, I'm a comedian, so there's one called So You're Gonna Be a Dad, I think it's just called.
It's a book.
And it was very funny. And then there's a comedian in Australia and the host of Lego Masters Australia, Hamish Blake. He does a podcast called How Other Dads Dad, where he just talks to all of these different famous, successful dads of different fields. Brilliant. And it was brilliant. Like, it just made me go, oh my God, okay, everything I felt is fine and okay. And there's other ways to feel as well. And yeah, I'm pumped again.
Mm.
But at first, but I just want to let other dads know that, like, it's okay to have that kind of emotional stunting. Like, it's all right. Like, it's kind of part of the journey. And and yeah, it's okay. I'm talking to you from the past. It's going to be all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, what a fantastic podcast. I'm going to check that out myself.
Yeah.
And
I have other dads down.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, looking at your, you know, what you told me about your own kind of journeys around mental health, you know, I mean, you know, you've both been through kind of difficult journeys, but I always feel, you know, people that go through kind of very difficult mental health journeys, when they come out on the other side, there's a lot of growth that comes from it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I guess you both bring all of that, you know, accelerated personal growth, you know, into your parenting, because there is growth through suffering, isn't there? Often, I mean, it's not always the case. I mean, I could talk to you both for hours, but I'm so conscious of time. I want to just pick up on, first of all, the book. Maddie, to tell the listeners a little bit about the book, how they can get hold of it, what it's about.
Yeah, so it's actually, Mark, about my journey with an eating disorder and kind of and recovery. However, it's told from the perspective of a child. So it is a kid's book. It's a picture book. It's called When Anna Came to Stay. And yeah, it's a project I sort of worked on for a couple of years in conjunction with the Butterfly Foundation, which is an Australian eating disorders charity here. And we worked alongside a beautiful illustrator in Brisbane, and sort of put together this book that hopefully can act as a tool for not only children sort of going through those feelings of self-esteem and body issues, but also potentially the family surrounding them and how to support in situations like that. So When Anna Came to Stay, it's available on my website, maddietyres.com.
And there's awesome pictures.
And there's, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful picture book. So it's a lovely kind of, I suppose, conversation starter for families that potentially could be entering that realm. And I certainly know for my family back in, it would have been the late 90s when my eating sort of issues started, there was certainly no resources for kids that age. And, you know, sadly, we are living in a time where eating disorders are becoming more prevalent in really young children as well.
Okay.
Exactly. So this book hopefully can act as a bit of a tool to help get those difficult conversations started. But it was a really beautiful experience, very cathartic for me as well, which was great.
and what a fantastic resource. I mean, we as our listeners know, we'll put all of your links, you know, to everything that you do, to the book, onto our social media sites. And I also wanted to pick up just a couple more questions before I let you both go. But Jimmy, I wanted to pick up on your work with the Starlight Foundation. Could you say a bit about that?
Yeah, 100%. So I work for a charity in Australia called the Starlight Children's Foundation. Just incredibly wonderful organization to work for. And they have a presence in all of the major children's hospitals around Australia. And they've got this wonderful mythology where there's these aliens from outer space called Captain Starlight comes and cheers up kids. And basically I run their planet. Mm-hmm. So there's a planet called Planet Starlight, and it streams live streams to kids around Australia every day of the week. Kids can come and play games on the platform. It's like a kind of cool, fun, intergalactic, very silly platform for kids. And I get to basically make up a lot of that content, write very silly songs, be a whole bunch of puppets, and tell a bunch of aliens what to do. It's a pretty fun job.
He's doing a lot of practice for this baby, Mark.
Basically. Yeah. My whole life is just leading up to being a dad, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
It's silly skills I've learned.
But looking at the side projects that you both do, I mean, the book and your work, Jimmy, with the Starlight in Children's Foundation, I mean, how brilliant. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, really helping kind of other people in different ways. I'm going to ask, I always ask our guests at the end their favorite kind of go-to coping strategies for sustaining good mental health. So could I just finish off by just asking you both that? I mean, what do you do to sustain good mental health?
Jimmy, do you want to go first? What's your favorite?
I've got to admit, with the pre-baby build-up, I have not been living by these words for the past week because we've just been doing too much. But I think, and I'm not a sporty man.
Sporty man.
But like getting off my butt and actually exercising, even though I hate a lot of exercise, is just incredible. Yeah, I think we are these, you know, sophisticated beings that live in buildings and use these flat things to talk to each other. But at the end of the day, I think we're also animals that need to run around in the paddock a little bit to actually function. And I can't believe I'm admitting to this. I'm clearly becoming a dad now. I think exercise is such a go-to one for me now.
Yeah.
And a teenage me would just be looking at me going, "You're an idiot." but that and your diet and sleep, I think, which I say that now as a man who's about to have a baby and lose so much sleep. But I'll hand it over to you, Mads.
Look, I'm very similar. For me, like, exercise has always been a huge release and obviously an endorphin kind of hit for me. So I love going to the gym, but also just getting out for a walk. I think whenever I'm stressed, like, I just, and you know, Jimmy knows when I go quiet and I'm a bit internal, sometimes you just sort of say to me, go and take the dog for a walk. So we've got a little dog at our feet at the moment, Chewy, and taking him for a walk around the block and just getting some fresh air and kind of clearing my head is always just a bit of a game changer. In conjunction with talking, like, I'm a real talker, as you can probably tell. And I do love to sort of debrief when I'm sort of at the point of debriefing, when I've had that moment of kind of thinking through it, you know, be it with Jimmy or my mom or sister or my dad and some really beautiful close friends. So I do like to kind of talk through what I'm going through, and that certainly helps. So and all that stuff's free, isn't it? You don't have to pay for that.
Absolutely. But I think you're right. You don't have to go to the gym. You could just going out and getting fresh air. I think when we're having an argument, it's just always best. I always just go, I'm just actually going to go around the block. Just take a walk, breathe it. It seems dramatic, but actually it's so much better than just saying it when you're in that stupid. Rage.
I mean, there's some research in couples dynamics that says that, I think for memory, if the heart rate in either or both partners is over 90, I think, or, you know, one of you is kind of shut down, there is literally no point talking about what the disagreement until you both calm down. So it's a brilliant strategy supported by research. Just take a time out, right?
Just get the eye watches out. What are you?
It's overnight. I've got to go for a walk. Yeah.
But, can't talk to the watch drops.
But listen, I just want to thank you both. It's been a brilliant first show for season 5, and it has been an absolute pleasure to meet you. Let me have all your links, and Joe will put them all on our social media sites. And I wish you so well, you know, with the birth of your baby girl. And lovely to meet you both.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think our listeners will agree, what an absolutely fantastic episode 1 of season 5. Maddie and Jimmy were so generous in sharing, you know, the mental health journeys and also the experiences that led them into the entertainment field. Really, really interesting. Could have spoken to them for hours. If you want to check out their social media sites and all of the things that they do, please check out our social media sites, and the links will obviously be with this podcast, both the audio and the YouTube. And also, I would urge you to check out Maddie's book, which sounds like an absolutely brilliant resource for families where there is a young person with an eating disorder within the family system. I always find it really, really inspirational and so helpful, I think, to have guests on the show that are in recovery from addictions and eating disorders. I think often people that are mired in addiction, in eating disorder, feel that, you know, recovery is not possible and their lives will never change. And I think it is really, really inspirational to have guests that, you know, that are kind of further along on that journey and indeed in recovery. So, you know, thank you again for Maddie and Jimmy for sharing that. Series 5 is going to be about relationships. We're going to have lived experience couples on, going to have industry professionals on working with relationships. I aim to cover things like affairs and betrayal, attachment types, and much, much more. Got a really kind of interesting show coming up around arguments soon with a relate trained couples counsellor. We're also going to have shows around different therapies, which has always been the case on all of our shows, irrespective of the themes. And I've got I'm lining a show up at the moment with a hypnotherapist who works primarily with trauma. So that should also be, you know, a fascinating show, really interesting to hear the work that she's doing. Talking about subscriptions, as I always do at the end of the shows, lots and lots of people listen to our shows. They don't always subscribe. So if you are enjoying the shows, please do subscribe. It helps us out in so many different ways. And also check out the YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is not doing nearly as well in terms of hits as the audio channels. So if you want to see the videos, I've got most of the videos from season 4 now and a few more besides, then check out YouTube's hashtag Psychotherapy Unfogged, Mark Fielding. And if you want to comment, like, then please do. And if you want to send in comments around any of the shows, then please do. Joe and I are always delighted when people rate the show and also make comments. So, you know, please do that. Episode 2 will be around shortly. So stay tuned for that one. And as I always say at the end of the show, you know, look after yourself, look after each other, and look after the planet. And I'll see you on the next episode soon. Thanks again for listening to the show. If you have been affected by any of the topics on this show or any other of our shows, if you're in the UK, then please reach out. Samaritans can be contacted on 116 123. Now, the GP is also a good source of contact and can be the gateway for, you know, counselling services and other mental health support. Reach out to your mental health support team, mental health first aider, or trusted friend, colleague, or family member. We have a lot of international listeners. So if you're listening from a non-UK country, then please reach out to, you know, your country's healthcare and mental health care providers. And remember, it's okay not to be okay.
Hashtag psychotherapy unfogged with Mark Fielding.